Our next speaker, Nicholas, made a web thing that's worth the wait. A renderer for you and your GPU. Now, frenetic applause would be great.
Thank you so much. Got lots to cover and only 25 minutes to fit all of that in. So without further ado, let me talk to you about vector graphics in Rust and the GPU and how to use the GPU to make that happen. And in the context of that, I'm going to talk about a crate that I've been working on for maybe, I don't know, like 3 years. And it's called Lyon, and it's kind of my R&D sort of toy project, which I use to make to try ideas and algorithms to render vector graphics on the GPU. So before I get into the details of Lyon, I just want to get the terminology straight. So on the one hand, you have raster graphics. So typically, typical image format like a PNG, a JPEG, like something that you display on the screen by using a uniform grid of pixels, and working with uniform grids of pixels is really convenient for a lot of things, but also comes with some challenges. For instance, you need to think about the resolution at which you author your content and the resolution at which you present it. And when the two don't match, which they usually don't, you need to figure out how to scale your content to the resolution at which you present it. And sometimes, well, you will get artifacts like a blurry mess or a pixelated mess. And it's not necessarily very pleasant to deal with as a content author. Sometimes your resolutions also kind of change. Sometimes you need to present on a phone or on a PC with different sort of screen sizes. And raster graphics is sort of like the fundamental building block of presenting anything on the screen. But for authoring, it has like a few disadvantages, file size being one of them as well. But on the other hand, you have vector graphics. And when I talk about vector graphics, well, think about it as the SVG file that you will author using Inkscape, Illustrator, this kind of software. But also like beyond that, like HTML and CSS, I consider to be a vector format in the sense that instead of specifying pixel colors everywhere, you will say, I want to put some text there. I want to put a box here, and it has this color. And the way you author your content usually doesn't really depend on the resolution of the screen, or at least it's not like it can more easily scale to different resolutions. And so that little thingy that I had on the previous slide didn't look like much, but when you add a lot of it, you end up with this ghost script tiger that is always present in any vector graphics presentation. So there it is, in my case. On a day-to-day basis, you guys interact with vector graphics content like all the time. For instance, I was talking about web browsers and web pages, but also maps. Typically, we'll make use of vector graphics because this kind of content needs to be transferred over the network, and vector graphics are like a more sort of expressive and compact representation that is independent of the resolution. So let me see if I can zoom on that thing. Right. So this is an SVG that I exported from OpenStreetMap. And as you zoom on it, you can see that it doesn't turn into a blurry mess or a pixelated thing. And but it doesn't stop there. Like all of your apps nowadays, like modern apps use vector graphics for icons, for text, for rendering diagrams, for all of the UI typically now is directives to render things rather than just, oh, here is an image that represents the entire thing. If you think about it, if you took that diagram right there and as an author decided to bake this diagram into an image and then ship that to the users, that would be a terrible workflow, and you wouldn't be able to do interesting things like animating that diagram or like making transitions or whatnot. Video games are also an area where you can do fun things with vector graphics, right? You could have interesting gameplay mechanics that rely on the idea of having of presenting things at different scales. For instance, what if I want to zoom on that ladybird over there, right? You can do interesting things with vector graphics, and again, the file size is a big issue for video games today, be it 2D or 3D games. They tend to ship gigabytes and gigabytes of texture memory these days, and if you start thinking in terms of vector graphics, then you can make that like a lot smaller, and maybe even think about shipping your game over the network. Which it's really hard. Like if for instance Ubisoft tried to publish Rayman Origin on a web browser, they would have this like, oh, we have 10 gigabytes of texture memory that we need to stream over the network, and that's a bit of an issue. And you could do a lot of stuff that you don't usually see on a lot of games, 2D games, because of the problem of being fixed to a certain resolution. For instance, maybe a zoom on a character and better show like expressions and put some emphasis and sort of enhance the storytelling that way. But the challenge with working with vector graphics everywhere is that today's computers and phones and screens in general have a lot of pixels, like really a lot of them. And be it your really underpowered CPU on the phone or overpowered CPU on your computer, they actually struggle to go through these 4K screen and like set the color of every pixels at interactive frame rate. If you think about this tiger thing that I showed you earlier, it's built upon layers and layers and layers of shapes, which means that if you draw things back to front, you're going to touch like pixels quite a few times, and you're going to hit this memory bandwidth limit that is pretty hard to get by on a 4K screen, whatever the power of your CPU is. So how did we go about fixing this? This is interesting. Okay, I thought so. So if you look at the games industry, they actually had to solve this problem, and they've solved it like a while ago already. Video games, most of them tend to refresh the entire screen at interactive frame rates, and they managed to pull that off at very high resolutions as well. So maybe there are things that we can learn from the ways they've been able to fix this. And nowadays, like most of the video games, like 99.99999% of the video games that ship today, they all make use of the GPU. And to be fair, I should sort of present it the other way, actually. Like, hardware manufacturers make GPUs so that you can play games. And these GPUs are made to perform certain kinds of things really, really fast so that you can play games. And if, as a web browser or an application that needs to render vector graphics, we can leverage what the hardware vendors have built for game developers, then maybe we're onto something. So the basic primitive that all video games are based on these days is triangles. Like meshes, what we call a mesh is the way we represent these 3D models, by representing them with triangles around the surface, and then splatting some textures on them, and then animating that in a 3D world. And GPUs are pretty much designed to render triangles very fast and touch a lot of pixels very fast using triangle rasterization. So that's interesting. What can we do with this? Another thing that I want to touch on quickly, and if I have time, I'll sort of get back to that towards the end of this presentation, is that in order to solve the problem of things being rendered in the front and in the back in the 3D world, the hardware vendor came up with this idea of having a def buffer, so like this or Z buffer, as we sometimes call it, which is kind of like a buffer that contains the depth of every pixel, and so that it lets you make sure that if you draw something that is behind something that you've already drawn, then the pixels that are behind are going to be discarded rather than covering the thing that you've already drawn. And it started as a way to sort of solve the problem of rendering 3D worlds, but it actually ended up being a great tool to avoid writing into memory. It's actually a lot more complicated than like just a buffer in memory. Like the hardware is like really hand-tuned and optimized. It's a hierarchical representation. It all tries to avoid as much memory bandwidth traffic as possible, because this is pretty much the bottleneck in video games today. So how do we go about doing this kind of stuff in Lyon? Lyon is based on the same idea as those video games, which is to take vector graphics and turn them into this soup of triangles, this triangle mesh that you can feed the GPU, and then the GPU gets really good at rendering them. And this process of taking a shape, an SVG path or what have you, into a triangle mesh is called tessellation. Sometimes people also call it triangulation. So generating the tessellation for convex polygons is actually quite easy. You can just pick a vertex and then loop through the other vertex in order, and then just add triangles, and it will work out. But most interesting paths or vector shapes are not convex at all. So we need to figure something out for this. We can't just take an edge and then take a neighbor edge and then make a triangle out of the two, because you might intersect with other edges that are in the shape that are actually quite far away in the loop of vertices. And so we need to sort of come up with a solution that is able to sort of look at vertices that are nearby and figure out how to add triangles that don't cover pixels that are outside of the shape. And already, if we take a step back, we're going to see that this is a bit of a, at the heart of it, it's a problem of figuring out intersection and actually avoiding them. There is one kind of polygon that has interesting properties. It's not as easy as convex polygons, but it will turn out useful. It's what I call Y-monoton polygons. You can also have X-monoton polygons. Basically, the idea is you want to have polygons that are monoton along a certain axis. And in the case of Lyon, I'm using the Y-axis. A Y-monoton polygon, basically, the idea is that if you draw a horizontal line anywhere in the plane, it will intersect with the polygon at most twice, which is interesting because basically at any height, if you intersect with the polygon, there is always a left and a right side, and this sort of makes it kind of easy to go through your shape and add triangles in between, ping-ponging in between the left and the right side, because you know by definition that there's nothing in between that's going to produce intersections that you don't want. For instance, this is not a monoton polygon because it has this type of vertices. This is what I call a merge vertex. So this is where two sort of shapes sort of merge together, and this is a split vertex. This is where the thing sort of splits into two things. And in terms of algorithms, if we can figure out how to decompose polygons so that we don't have any merge vertex or split vertex, then we might be onto something. And there is a pretty efficient algorithm for doing this, which I'm going to give you sort of a bit of a walkthrough. It's actually more of a run through. I'm going to oversimplify all of this, because if I had to explain the entire algorithm, it would be taking 3 hours, and it would be painful for everyone in this room, including me. What I just want is to give you sort of an intuition of how these things work. When you go home tonight, you probably won't be I'm coding a monoton tessellator before going to sleep, but at least you'll have some sort of an intuition of how this works. So imagine a horizontal line, an imaginary horizontal line that goes through your geometry from top to bottom. And as we stop at each vertex, we remember the list of all of the vertices that intersect with this image and array line, which I will from now on call the sweep line. And so we add those edges to that list. And then as we proceed, we remove edges that are not intersecting anymore from the sweep line. So for instance, in this case, on the step number two, I have this guy in the sweep line. I have I just introduced this guy over there, the green one, and I'm removing the edge on the left. I truly apologize for anyone who cannot see the slides or cannot see colors, because I didn't really think about that when I was making the presentation. So as we go through in Y order, we maintain that list. And then eventually, we run into one of those vertices that we don't want to have in our modern polygons. So as this dramatic red background indicates, we're into a place where we need to do something. And thanks to the nature and the structure of this sorted list of edges that we have in our sweep line, it's very easy to find the next edge that is directly on the left of the current vertex that we want to connect to something, then go up that edge, select this vertex, and then insert a new edge there. And now we're happy because we no longer have this this split vertex that was making us so sad and having like red backgrounds and all. So we continue. And we run into another instance of a type of vertex that we don't want, the infamous merge vertex. And again, we have our dramatic red background. But in this instance, there is actually nothing that we can do, because if we were to try to connect this guy with some other vertex that we've visited before, then we wouldn't be. Well, like we would still have this sort of V-shaped merge vertex that we're trying to avoid. So we have to remember that there's a merge vertex that we need to resolve later. And as it turns out, in the next iteration, I am under this merge vertex, which means that basically I am at a point that is between those two edges that are like around this merge vertex. You guys probably don't see the bottom of the slides very much. Sorry about that. And we remembered that we had something to fix up there. We insert a new edge, and there we go. We have our monotone polygons decomposed. And so this is like sort of the general idea of the algorithm, and it's been like sort of documented in the literature like forever. This pretty good literature about this. So if you're interested, you can look into this. One thing that is interesting about Lyon is that I started by implementing like sort of the naive and common algorithm for figuring this stuff out. And basically, it's composed of three phases. In the first phase, you need to take your arbitrary shape that might have self-intersections and resolve your self-intersections and decompose your polygon into polygons that don't have into several polygons that don't have self-intersections. Then you go through each of these polygons and you do this monotone polygon decomposition that I just showed you, and then you go through all of those monotone polygons and you do this ping-ponging of the to insert the actual triangles that are the output of your algorithm. So I implemented this, and it was working OK. The performance was sort of on par with what the other tessellators were doing. But if you think about it, all of those passes are processing their input and producing their output in the same order, like top to bottom. So if you sit down for a bit, and actually I had to sit down for a long time, you can concatenate this algorithm into a single pass algorithm. And to my knowledge, Lyon is actually the only implementation of a monotone polygon tessellator that runs into a single pass. But as a result of that, it's on average twice faster than the other tessellators that I benchmarked it against. So I'm pretty happy about this. But in order to do this, I had to run into more edge cases. And basically, the algorithm from there on diverged a lot from the sort of official common monotone-polygon tessellation algorithm. So it's a pretty unique algorithm, actually. So now let's look at what things look like when we take the triangle view of something that we've tessellated. Oh, by the way, I forgot to tell you, but this entire slide deck is a Rust program that uses Lyon to render SVG elements. So if I press W, I can see the wireframe view. I can, do this in any slide, and it was a terrible idea, but but I'm happy about it anyways. So in the case of maps, I think that's sort of I really like this kind of the view. It's kind of fun to see how this what we're actually sending to the GPU is those triangles, right there. Let's look at this guy because I spent 3 hours drawing that thing, so I want to show it to you again. Right? I just And in this case, actually, for the benefit of the demo, I was talking about resolution independence, but as I zoom in to things, you're going to start seeing angles, and this is supposed to be perfectly round. This is because right now Lyon works with polygons and doesn't work with curves, and so in order to render curves, I first have to flatten curves into a series of line segments, and this is dependent of the resolution. So normally, what you would want to do is, as people zoom, you sort of re-tessellate things so that the thing is always sort of nice and round. But for the if I did this and then I couldn't zoom on the demo and have you have a look at the beautiful triangles of that ladybird over there. So I was talking a lot about the filling algorithm. We can do the same thing for strokes. Strokes are actually a lot easier. We just follow the path and insert a strip of triangles along the thing. And then for joins and caps, we just do some specific tessellation depending on what kind of stuff that we want to do. Lyon currently supports the typical things that you can do in SVG. It's a very simple stroke algorithm is very simple. It's actually something that I did more just because, but I was more interested in the filling algorithm. I'm starting to run out of time, so I'm going to quickly glance over this one. So this is a slide that I took from a web render presentation I gave a little while ago. The main idea is that if we're going to render things back to front, which sort of makes sense from it's kind of intuitive to go through your scene, render things back to front so that you don't have something stomping over something that should be on the front of it, right? But if you do this, it means that you're going to touch pixels a lot of times. And if you have opaque shapes, then it's sort of wasteful to draw something to cover it in the next draw call. So what we did with WebRender, and I think is a technique that sort of lends itself naturally to work very well with the kind of tessellation that we do in Lyon, is to render opaque shapes back to front, front to back, sorry, so that as you render things underneath it, then the GPU hardware can optimize away writing to memory, which is your bottleneck. And so this is a technique that we use in WebRender, and it works really well. This slide that actually uses this technique. And then for pixels that need blending, transparency or things like this, you still render things back to front to get the correct rendering. A lot of people asked me about Pathfinder, so I just wanted to have a quick note about Pathfinder. So Patrick and I, we both work for the same company, right? We've been talking about these things quite a bit. It's fair to say that Pathfinder influenced Lyon and Lyon influenced Pathfinder to a great extent. Lyon has been around since a lot longer than Pathfinder, actually. But the difference is that Patrick is actually working professionally on Pathfinder, whereas Lyon is more of a side R&D project of mine. Pathfinder's algorithm is, Pathfinder actually has two algorithms. It has one for rendering small text that is very optimized for cases where you don't have a lot of pixels to cover, but you really need very good anti-aliasing. And it has a different algorithm that is optimized for the memory bandwidth when you need to cover a lot of pixels. The one I'm most interested in is the second one, because it's the one that's sort of similar to, that tries to fill the similar niche to what I'm doing at Lyon. And Pathfinder actually, instead of generating triangles, it will generate what Patrick called, what is it called? This a Bezieroid. It's like a strip like this, but instead of having like this a quad shape with straight edges on the sides, it will actually handle curves on the side. And so you go through your geometry from top to bottom. It's also a sweep line algorithm that works similarly to the one I showed you earlier, a much simpler one though. And you generate these things that you can send to the GPU, and then the GPU will have, like, you have to do a lot of shader work on the GPU. So a shader is a little program that you run on the GPU to evaluate the curves. So there's different trade-offs. Like, if you're just rendering polygons, it's really hard to beat Lyon, because Lyon is just like doing exactly what GPUs have been doing since they've been invented. So they're actually just using all of the capabilities of the triangle rasterizer. But if you need to do like a lot of curves and have very precise anti-aliasing, Pathfinder has like more advanced solutions. So I think that you guys, if anyone wants to do vector graphics on the GPU in Rust, you should check out both and see what works best for you. It has like those two approaches have different trade-offs. For instance, Lyon will generate like twice, like half of the geometry that Pathfinder would generate, for instance. So it has like a different memory and performance trade-offs. But you'll get probably like nicer curves and anti-aliasing in Pathfinder. What's next in Lyon? Lately, if you're looking at the repository, I haven't been pushing a lot of stuff because I'm sort of playing on my own with ideas to sort of advance the state of the art of monotone tessellation a bit further. So one of the biggest problem with monotone polygon tessellation is that it tends to generate those really thin triangles because of the way we do the triangulation of the monotone shape. And these thin triangles are not really nice for your GPU for reasons that I won't have time to explain here. But if you do a tessellation that looks more like this, you're going to get better performance. It's hard to build an intuition of why that is. The thing is, if you have something like this, like monotone polygons are so simple to tessellate that the algorithm, like the known algorithm, does this kind of thin mess. But if you buffer a few vertices and then sort of look ahead and say, oh, okay, did we like are the left and the right side far apart? And if so, can I do something about the tessellation so that I can simplify this side, then simplify this other side, and then just do the in between? You get a much nicer tessellation. And so this is something that I've been working on. I'm getting some good results, and I think I'm going to push that into Lyon very soon. Another thing that I've been telling people I would work on I think this has been in the wiki for maybe 2 years already, is actually have the tessellator know about quadratic Bezier curves, a bit like Pathfinder, but still using the monotone polygon approach to be able to make a truly resolution-independent tessellation. And that, at this point, this is like really like research. This is a hard problem, and I'm sort of going at it, and I've been going at it for a while, and it's quite interesting, but it might take a while to complete. Before I stop, I just want to give a big shout out for the 19 people who contributed to the project. You guys are awesome. I don't know if some of you are in this room, but in any case, thanks a lot. It would be it really helped me sort of keep the motivation, and I really like that I got these contributions from you awesome people. So thank you very much.